The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
On Friday lunchtime before round 10, all the focus was on how much impact Buddy Franklin could have against the Magpies. Then, cue 72 hours of media madness as Brad Scott's time as North Melbourne coach diminished by the minute and by the story. We'll go behind the scenes of Scott's sensational departure, as well as speak to AFL Coaches Association Chief Executive Mark Brayshaw about Scott's legacy, as well as the best assistants in the business who might be vying for that now vacant position. Hello and welcome to the Fox Footy Podcast. Ben Waterworth with you, as is rising fair or fast host star, Sarah Olley.
Am I doing that today?
No, not today, but rising star, you were excellent last week.
And Thank you.
It's also Christmas Eve, or the equivalent of Christmas Eve, for Tom Morris, as the World Cup is starting in just a matter of days. And you're very up and about, Thomas.
I am, Ben. I'm so excited for this one-day international World Cup. Never has batting been so entertaining in the short form of the game. And there's something about cricket in England that just brings out the nostalgic senses. We haven't had one for 20 years, a World Cup in the UK. And the last time I was there, it was a thrilling World Cup. And I look forward to putting together a sister podcast for Fox Cricket.
About to ask about this. So 20 years since in the same country, Australia won that World Cup in thrilling circumstances. Yeah. And you've done some digging and spoken to a lot of key characters of that campaign.
Yeah, stay tuned to Fox Cricket because we'll have a celebration of the 1999 One Day International World Cup coming soon on this platform and many others. And I look forward to that, Ben. But for the moment, we're talking about footy.
Specifically, we're going to be talking about Brad Scott's incredible weekend and an incredible weekend for the North Melbourne Footy Club and the media industry as well in terms of how quickly this narrative moved. So as I mentioned before, on Friday afternoon, Brad Scott was able to palm off at a press conference some reports that, you know, his position at the club is on shaky ground. And then within hours, it was going to be Brad Scott's last game coaching North Melbourne against the Western Bulldogs on Saturday. Were you surprised, Sarah, from just watching the media narrative go about how quickly this moved?
I've never seen anything move so fast. I mean, you wouldn't have wanted to get a
concussion. I've seen you run around the tan.
Okay, thank you. You wouldn't have wanted to have received a concussion on a Friday afternoon because you would have woken up on Saturday or Sunday and gone, huh? Everything moved so quickly and it seemed to move very amicably, except for one small incident on the field, but it all moved really fast and it seemed to be a real grown-up moment for the AFL industry in terms of a coach and a club agreeing to come to the end of their, I guess, mutual agreement.
Now, Tom, I'm happy to say here that you had a wind of this uncertainty around Scott's position for a little bit, for maybe a week or so.
Yeah.
Didn't quite have enough to go with it a week ago, and then it just all sort of came to a bit of a head on the Friday at the North Melbourne board meeting.
Yeah, North Melbourne's board met on Friday morning, and that is precisely the time when they accepted among themselves Brad Scott's proposal from about 3 or 4 weeks earlier that this would be his last season of coaching. But they went one step further and said this would also be his last game of coaching for the club, round 11 against the Western Bulldogs. Brad Scott then had a press conference, unbeknownst to him that the board had already met.
So when he fronted the media for his weekly presser on the Friday afternoon, he had no idea that the board had ticked this off.
Had no idea the board had ticked it off. That afternoon, Carl Delina called him into his office, the CEO, and said, this is what the board's decided. This will be your last game coaching. We'll have a press conference on Monday to announce it. And Brad Scott said, okay, well, let's organise a financial package to part on good terms.
Yep.
They did so, and I'm
intrigued. This is all without his manager as well.
That's what I'm about to say. I'm intrigued that they did so without his manager, but that's probably another topic for another day. I'd love to know how that eventuated, because Brad Scott wouldn't have negotiated any of his contracts for years, I would have thought. They would have all been left to Craig Kelly. Then he's left in Carl Delina's office without his manager's knowledge, as far as we can tell.
It's extraordinary.
And then driving home, the story comes out from Mark Robinson of the Herald Sun that it's over. Now, you're right, we had all had whispers. Tom Brown had spoken about it on Triple M. Jared Healy had discussed it. Tim Watson had spoken about it, that he was unlikely to be coaching. But the person who broke the story is Mark Robinson, because he was emphatic.
Yep.
This was it. It's over.
Yep.
And then within a few hours, it became more than it's over. It became this weekend, it's it. And that was it. And Saturday was a bizarre day at Marvel Stadium, not least because North Melbourne won and played quite good footy and are just two games outside the eight. But also Brad Scott's incident with David King and then his denials post-game. It made for a truly unique weekend.
So what was the feeling, because you were there for working for Fox Footy and foxfooty.com.au as well, what was the feeling particularly at the press conference? And I don't know if you're able to get into the rooms afterwards as well.
Speaking
of our colleague, Josh Gabalich, who said it was a very strange, bizarre feeling.
I was in the rooms with Gabbo after the game, and Gabbo wrote a couple of excellent pieces. But we went down to the rooms, and North Melbourne had won. And Brad Scott was going to be part of the song for his first time in 211 games, or how many games he coached at North Melbourne, or how many wins, 106 wins. So his first time ever at North Melbourne, he was going to be part of the song. But then he was waiting for his kids, and the wait went, and it went on and on. And in the end, it was about a 12 or 13 minute wait until his kids came down. By which time, as you can imagine, after a win like this, the whole feeling, the whole vibe out of the room had been vacuumed out. It had been suctioned out. It was flat by the time they sung the song. And then Brad Scott went into a press conference. Normally the winning team goes first. Because it had taken so long, Luke Beveridge went first. And the Dogs really should have been the story. And then Brad Scott went into the press conference and didn't really say a hell of a lot more than what he'd said pre-game to Eddie McGuire and also 3AW. But it was just bizarre. Probably doesn't even do it justice, Sarah. It was absolutely weird what happened after the game. And then for Brad Scott, I mean, I like Brad Scott, but for him to say the players were pulling him into the song, I don't quite buy that too much. And I know that some players were really a little bit agitated, and as Brad Scott said, but agitated that the song was taking so long. It took 15 minutes after the game.
A bit too much of me. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that was the perception. Yeah. There'd be some that disagree with that. There'd be some that think that's absolutely the case. So it's a matter of perspective.
And then you've got to juxtapose that against what some of the players were saying after the game. And Ben Cunnington, who rarely gives media interviews, he was so emotional. Even if you just close your eyes and listen to his voice, you could hear it wavering.
Yeah.
Because he didn't find out, because he's not big on social media, until he got to Marvel Stadium on Sunday, that was it. Or was it Saturday?
Saturday.
That was it. So he had about an hour and a half to prepare for this last game with his really one and only coach that he's had at AFL level. So it's an amazing result that North Melbourne were able to pick themselves up and perform in that way.
It is, but in sports around, so we're watching soccer on the TV at the moment in the studio.
Sunderland.
And there's players all the time that are due to leave, or changes are due to be made in coaching at the end of games or at the end of seasons. And because they're professionals, they just perform. But the AFL culture is not that. If a player signed for another club mid-season, we would assume they wouldn't be able to perform for that club for the rest of the season. But I think they can. And this proves that no matter what else is happening, players have the ability to just play footy. And I think we probably can be a bit more mature as an industry to understand that from a player trade perspective. The coach leaving is clearly unique, and a lot of players didn't know how it would actually eventuate on the field. But as it proved, it didn't really make an impact at all. If anything, it pumped them up.
But then we do see times where there are emotional responses. I mean, we've seen it with Carlton lately, that after they get absolutely whacked in the media, then they pick themselves up again. So you just don't know how a playing group's going to respond to that. Especially the younger players, the older players, the players that have come in, you know, through the trade period, that have come in under Brad Scott's guise.
Yeah.
And now he's no longer going to be there.
I'm more talking about, I'm more talking about when clubs or players know something's going to happen in the future that we're not used to. Carlton don't know what's going to happen in the future. I think that what happens to Carlton over the next 3 weeks is anyone's best guess.
I reckon a lot of rival clubs would have been keeping a close eye when Robbo's story broke. A lot of rival clubs would have been keeping a close eye on how this all eventuated and potentially some best practice learning of how it all came to fruition. Have we learned, or do you reckon rival clubs have learned anything about how to manage a situation like this, or how not to manage a situation like this?
I think they would like to think they've learned, but I think it's extremely rare that you have a coach who's happy to leave club that's happy to let that coach leave.
So so it's a lot of the public perception is that it's been extremely amicable. Is that your take on it well?
I think it's been amicable. I still think Brad Scott would have liked to coach a few more weeks, if not till the end of the year.
Yeah. But he said he wanted to see out the journey.
Yeah, he said that. But it also works for him for reasons that have been discussed, Sarah, in that he gets time now to effectively be a free agent coach and weigh up his options for 2020 and beyond.
And he doesn't have to be tied to North Melbourne's end of this season. I mean, they could very well end up in the bottom four, and he doesn't have to live with that as his remaining impact at North Melbourne, I guess.
So why did he wear a North Melbourne polo on 360?
Yes, that was quite interesting. I think that was, well, he said it was sort of the fan still. He was coming out he went on the show as a fan, which had all the sponsor gear still and all that jazz. I'm not 100% sure. I think he's genuinely, as Ben Buckley said on Sunday, he does leave the Kangaroos as a shin boner, and he's given great service to that club for a decade. The polo was a bit strange. I think Tim Hodges, 360 producer, offered him a men's club shirt to wear or a men's club jacket to wear, and he said, no, I want to wear the North Melbourne polo. Whether it was genuinely as he just wanted to wear it as a fan or he didn't wear the polo on the Sunday at the official press conference, and then a day later did wear the polo.
That's what made it weird.
Yeah.
The whole 4-day period was absolutely bizarre. And then I've got to say, I mean, maybe I'm in the minority, and I'm a big fan of Gary Lyon, you know that, but I just don't understand why we're trying to work out where the leak came from. I don't agree that it was a coordinated club leak, because what club would want that to come out hours before a game? I don't understand how that can make any sense at all. But I think us trying to search for the leak is probably against industry protocol. Probably.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're the ones that want to be leaked too.
Yeah.
Leak away, baby. Yeah.
So just the last one on Brad Scott. So he's on 360 last night, and he wasn't firm on what he wants to do from a coaching perspective, whether he wants to get back into it reasonably quickly. He said he wants to spend some time with his family and play some golf. Do we think that, Sarah, he'll be wanting to try and get back into coaching as soon as possible? Because he is good enough to be taking up a senior role at another club. He's got certainly the runs on the board. Do you think he'll be wanting to get back in pretty quickly, despite what he said on 360 and he sees a contract offer in front of him?
Well, the cynical view is that there's maybe already been an offer put to him, or at least part of an offer put to him. Because why else, when you've got this big lucrative contract hanging over you for next year, 800 grand or so, why would you give that up? I'm not sure if that's the case. We know he's very well connected. Of course he is, because he's, you know, an AFL legend. He's won premierships as a player and he's been at North Melbourne for 10 years. So, of course, he's well connected. I think he'll come back to coach. He was being a bit ambivalent about it last night, wasn't he? Saying that he doesn't really know what he wants to do. But he's the kind of guy that's got a fire in his belly, and you can see him being a career coach. Mm. I know that's a bit of a funny term to just bandy about. But for me, I feel like next year he'll definitely be at another club.
I agree, but I'm not sure he should be. I don't think that Brad Scott should be a walk-up start to be a coach elsewhere. Some people are talking about him having options to choose from. He can go to St Kilda if he wants, if that job comes up, or Carlton, or who knows. But
why don't you think he should be?
Well, because I think when you've got 10 years in a job, and yes, he's done a reasonable job at North Melbourne, but his overall winning percentage is 50%.
Yep.
I don't think you should walk into another job. This is not to say that it's wrong if he gets another job, but I don't think whereas if Clarko stopped now, he would walk into another job. I think Longmire would walk into another job. Brad Scott's not that level.
He's good enough to be a senior coach in another club.
Yeah,
again.
But so are a lot of other people. So it depends what the club wants.
Yep.
I think someone like Michael Voss or one of these recycled coaches is absolutely just as good as what Brad Scott would be.
Who doesn't have the same win-loss percentage.
Yeah, or the same tenure. Mm. Yeah. He's done it perfectly, Brad Scott, because if he left in 8 weeks or 10 weeks' time, and they were 15th on the ladder, he's actually left a bit of a basket case here.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's perfect for him. Inadvertently, he's jumped before he's been pushed.
You say that, you know, there are other coaches that you think could have done better than he did in 10 years, or perhaps deserve a better chance. But do we think we underestimate what he achieved at North Melbourne? I mean, it is a minnow club in Melbourne. Mm. He was coaching during compromised drafts with GWS and the Suns coming in.
Yep.
And he still took them to two prelims with a list that I think most people would think maybe, you know, shouldn't have got there.
It's his list, though. He's had 10 years to build a list, and this is what it is.
But he had, yes, I give you that, but it was also compromised throughout these periods where we've got these two clubs coming in.
It was. That made it more difficult.
And the biggest problem for North is they haven't been able to attract a big fish, because unlike a Hawthorn or a Geelong or these bigger Victorian clubs, they don't have that allure of those rival clubs. So I think I think he's done okay.
Mm. I think during that time, the compromised draft time, that was at the bottom end of the ladder, at the top end of the ladder. When they were successful, they also had Hawthorn when they were at their absolute best as well. So that's something that he had to compete with. I don't think they met in the final series.
Got a question for you, Ben.
Yes?
What would you rank Brad Scott's coaching tenure at North Melbourne in a school grade? What would you give it?
B+.
What would you give it, Sarah?
B.
B for me as well. Reasonable.
B's good.
Yep, good.
Like a B.
But an A tenure gets you another job automatically. I don't think a B does.
Yeah, okay.
But I still think it'll be another club next year. That's a different argument.
Speaking of the report card, you can read the round 10 report card on foxfooty.com.au, and there were some clubs that spoke that got some pretty low grades on the weekend. So I wanted to throw this sort of question at you. Of these teams, who was the most damning loss, do you think, from the weekend? So Port Adelaide went down, scoreless in the first quarter against Hawthorn, went down by 31 points. We mentioned the Bulldogs before, who's certainly have been hidden behind the North Melbourne story. Adelaide gave up a massive lead against West Coast. Essendon barely fired a shot until the final quarter. The Demons barely fired a shot all day until the final quarter. Carlton went down, and then Carlton went down in with some horrendous skills during that second half when they had the momentum of the game. There were some pretty bad losses in the weekend. Can you rank them in any way?
I think we're lucky Brad Scott got sacked because it was a shocking weekend for you. So there was something else to talk about. The Bulldogs are bad because if you look at who they've lost to this year, the Suns, the Blues, and who else?
Now North Melbourne.
So they've beaten good teams, but they're losing to teams that they really should have banked 12 points against. And that could be the difference between them making the finals or not. Port Adelaide, I think, were just out-coached. They didn't change the way they were playing until that last quarter.
Yeah, it's really interesting what Paul Roos said on the couch last night about Port Adelaide, how they you had the juxtaposition of Hawthorn, who don't change their game style and are so their behaviours are just drilled into them.
Yep.
Whereas Port Adelaide, their game, Roos claims that the game plan changes every year. So it's hard to drum in habits and behaviours into players when the game plan is constantly
changing.
Does
it change every year though? I mean, I'm not saying Paul Roos is wrong. I know it's changed this year, but did it change from 2016 to 17, then 17 to 18? I don't know. This year it's absolutely changed because Ken Hinckley is throwing caution to the wind and he's been bold in his trade and his draft strategy.
The personnel's changed too, hasn't it?
But I wonder if it had changed in the years before then as well.
At the start of the year, they were definitely one of the best forward half teams in the competition, locking the ball in the forward half, but their scoring has dropped off dramatically in the past 4 weeks. They've lost four games.
I really worry about Port, and I worry about Ken Hinckley as well. He's lucky he signed a 5-year contract when Gold Coast came after him. That's what forced Port's hand. But
do you not think Port are doing well this year?
I think they're doing okay. I think they need to make finals. They need to play finals. And at the moment, I don't think they will play finals.
Okay.
Yeah. When you trade as aggressively as they did, they need to play finals the year after.
They've drafted well, though. You've got to give them that.
The three young kids are good.
Yeah.
What about the Bombers? John Worsfold last night copped some pretty hard external criticism from Matthew Lloyd, Sarah, saying he's under enormous pressure at the moment and the Dons should look at coaching options elsewhere. Worsfold had a presser on Tuesday morning and almost quintessentially had quite a testy press conference as well and batted away some pretty hard grilling questions from the Stoop man, Julian De Stoop. Where are the Bombers and John Worsfold at?
For this, I'm going to defer to the pub test. And I was speaking to some friends on the weekend that go for the Bombers. And they're just...
Having a Pinot, were you?
No, I think I was having Aperol Spritz. Thank you, Ben.
Right.
Typical.
That's another point. They're just distraught. They're so over it. They can't remember their side being good. And it should be good. Yeah. It's just promise, promise, promise every year and under-deliver, under-deliver, under-deliver. So if I'm talking to my friends at the pub, which I was, they'd be happy to get someone new in and have an injection of new blood at the club because they don't see Worsfold taking them to their next flag.
Just on the D's, Tom, you would have been watching the game closely.
Yep.
I saw you suited up actually for the game. Were you in the MCC long room?
No, I was doing a mock call, actually.
Oh, excellent.
I wasn't suited. I'd just been at the Brad Scott press conference beforehand.
And you were looking very, very sharp as well. But if you were doing a mock call, that wouldn't have been a good game to mock call.
No, it was a lot of GWS, wasn't it?
Yeah.
One goal to halftime, was it? Yeah, one goal to halftime.
One goal to halfway through the third quarter.
12 minutes in the third quarter, that's right. And then 7 of the last 9, which makes it even worse.
Bizarre.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
The D's are in a lot of trouble. I'm looking at an article in the paper today where Melbourne has lost 89 games from players that would have been in the best 22 this year. The next is 61, which is GWS.
Yeah. So through injuries.
Through injury I'm talking about.
Yep.
It's a real problem, their injury management, but also a bit of bad luck doesn't help. But geez, they were terrible. And the Demon season is done. It's amazing how quickly it can happen. We sort of knew it probably 5 or 6 weeks ago, but now it's been confirmed. They played like a bottom 4 or 5 team against a pretty slick Giants outfit.
Yeah, they are looking very slick, the GWS Giants. Certainly among the top 3 of the power rankings, which you can check out on foxfooty.com.au. But now on the Fox Footy podcast, it is time for Australia's favourite segment, and Tom's back to lead us through this week, Fair or Farce.
Fair or Farce. I still get to do that bit.
I listened to last week, and I thought Sarah did a C-plus job. I thought it was okay.
She really I would give her an A-plus for delivery. Her authoritarian style was excellent.
No, I thought it was very good, Sarah. Well done, but glad to take the baton back off you.
Yeah.
Yep, which is always the way we operate in the bunker. I'll go to you first, Sarah. John Longmire was unconvincing when asked whether he would be at Sydney next year. Fair or farce?
No, that's fair.
Yep.
Just because he kind of trotted out the same line that coaches of the past have trotted out when...
They contracted.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
There's a contract. Has a contract ever meant less?
No, it's meaning less and less with every day. Yep. Tomorrow it will mean less than today.
For coaches
John.
And players.
Yeah.
It's a waste of oxygen for a coach to say, I'm contracted and therefore I'm staying.
Having said that, I mean, Brad Scott leaving North has just put an extra zero on John Longmire's price tag. Yeah. The Swans now
just like Hinkley
back into negotiations, trying to work out a new deal with him.
If he leaves, it'll be him. The Swans want to keep him.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there, Sarah, for what it's worth. Well done.
Ben, first for everything.
Ben, the mid-season draft was a resounding success, fair or farce?
I'm going to say farce for the time being, because if it's a resounding success, I think we can say that in a couple of months' time when maybe a Marlon Pickett or a Josh DeLuca, who might even come in pretty soon, judging by how the Carlton list boss was saying last night, makes an immediate impact in this season. But I think by the end of it, I think Jerry Waitley said it well on 360, by the end of that mid-season draft, it's like, right, I think we're ready for trading at this time of the year.
Yes, how juicy would that be?
I think we're ready for trading.
I just look forward to seeing how that will actually work.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of a mid-season trade, Jerry.
Ultimately, the players that were taken last night were picks 130 to 140 or 50 in the 2018 National Draft, really.
So just on the trading, how would that work with clubs being allowed to speak to players from opposition clubs mid-season? Because at the moment, they're not technically not allowed to. They speak to managers, although we know they do. It would just become more like round 5 chats rather than round 15 chats, wouldn't it?
Yep.
It's going to be exciting next year.
Yeah.
Sarah Ollie,
yes.
Carlton is a more attractive destination for a prospective coach than Essendon. Fair or farce?
I'm going to go fair with that. Yeah, no, because I think the list at Carlton and the talent 22 and under is better than at the Bombers. And I think that a different coach could perhaps harness the best from that group and take them forward. I'm much more bullish about the Blues long term than I am about the Bombers.
There's something... It's ingrained in the club at the moment. I can't put my finger on why or how. There's something wrong at Essendon.
Mm.
And there has been maybe
there
since...
There was something in the air that night.
That's good.
That's thank not bad.
Yeah.
Fernando. That's
yeah,
ABBA.
Fernando.
There's something... And there has been since the drug saga. And I don't know what it is. I don't even blame the people there at the moment. But there's just...
A stink.
An undercurrent of...
A stench.
Of lack of success or underperformance, isn't there? The stench.
But that stench was probably there before the supplement saga as well, wasn't it?
That is a stinky club, Ben.
I don't know. I don't know. I feel not. I feel like there's no reason now why they shouldn't be a top six or top
since
four
the club. Early 2000s, though, the Bombers have really struggled to, one, make finals and, two, definitely register a finals victory.
Yeah. I guess it was more acceptable in the early 2000s because they just dominated the 2000 season.
It's certainly been magnified since the Southland
Saga. It has
been.
Ben, I'm up to you. Dale Thomas is trying to sabotage Bolton's coaching career. Fair or farce?
That's reasonably farcical from you, Thomas.
What's he thinking?
That's pretty silly, I would have thought. Now, 2 days before a game, I think, you know, the odd wine, so I think Chris Judd said it on Footy Classified, the odd wine at dinner... 2 days before a game, a quiet one, a very quiet one is okay. But it sounds like these beverages that Thomas consumed were far from quiet in a public event 2 days before a game. And because he's one of the more senior players at a time when they've just been annihilated by 90 points against the Giants and they want to make a statement this weekend, it's a really poor message.
Tell you what's a bad message as well. I heard a talkback caller on Jared Waitley's show call up and say it's ridiculous the media are going after him. He was at a charity event, therefore doing the right thing. It is absolutely possible to do the wrong thing at a charity event.
But you can go to the charity event and not drink.
Or have one wine with dinner.
I still think the position that Carlton are in, you need to be seen to be doing the right thing and not be doing that.
What about the optics?
Yeah, and clubs, I can guarantee you, if, say he had 10 drinks, if he had 10 at home and no one saw, Carlton wouldn't care.
And apparently he rocked to training or the thing that Carlton had on the Saturday morning, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it is more an optical thing here for the Blues.
doesn't look good.
No.
Sarah, Gilbert McAdam is the most likable man in football. Gilly.
He did such a great interview on SEN the other day. Did you hear
it? Yes. Yeah.
He's so lovable, isn't he? You just want to kind of go up and squeeze him and give him a cuddle. I've loved seeing him on Channel 7's coverage this year. He's brought a real point of difference, a breath of fresh air.
Are you going to answer the question?
That's fair.
Okay.
Very fair.
I think his strength is in long-form discussion rather than boundary writing. Ben.
Thank you, Tom.
If John Longmire goes, Sydney should poach Stuart Dew, fair or farce?
That's not a bad suggestion from you, Thomas. I'd say that's fair because I think, as Paul Roos says, Stuart Dew is one of the coaches of the year because he's been able to get the best out of his playing group. Goes back to Sydney, he would know the majority of that playing group at the moment, spent a lot of years under John Longmire, know how the joint works. That would make a lot of sense.
The AFL would never let that happen. That would be the death of Gold Coast.
That would be
That would be the death.
Would it be bad for Stuart Dew's reputation as well to leave after a couple of years? I'm just hypothesising. I've got no intel on this.
Perhaps a little bit, but I don't think anyone could begrudge him for doing it.
And would anyone really care outside of Stuart?
I don't think like he would do it, though. He seems like the kind of guy that wants to stay there and turn this club around.
I think he's ingrained at the Suns.
Not a bad spot to
live. Alistair Lynch told us on the Fox Footy podcast after round two that they should get to halfway through the season and re-sign Stuart Dew. Probably now might be a wise time to do that.
Last couple. Sarah, Collingwood missed a trick eliminating Bec Goddard from its coaching race.
Collingwood missed a trick eliminating Bec Goddard from its race. I'm going to go with farce there. Just because I'm not privy to what happened in those meetings, and maybe Collingwood think that they're sounding out the right person and that Bec didn't fit in forever, what reason.
AFLW premiership coach. There's only been three of them.
I think she would be a great addition to any club. I don't know why Collingwood can't see that, but maybe there are things that we don't know. Mm. But if that means that we get to have Bec commentating for Fox Footy, then they're lost our game because she is fantastic.
She's good. Tom, she would have been perfect at the Gold Coast Suns, starting up the club there. I think the Gold Coast coach, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, sorry, but he's come from the Brisbane Lions, and that's been a big reason why the Gold Coast got him, because they've pinched so many players from the Lions, and I think he's had a bit of an influence in that.
Craig Starshevich, not happy.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
That's a very measured response, Sarah. Well answered. And last one. One to you, Ben. The media, as has been suggested on Twitter to me many times over the past couple of weeks, is too soft on the AFL. Fair or farce?
Yeah. Has Grant Thomas been tweeting you in particular?
No, just random saying what people assume that because we're paid by the footy industry generally that we go soft on the AFL. Is that a fair or farcical
suggestion? I think it's fair. I think there's a lot more room to go harder at the AFL. I just wonder if we've softened a little bit since the supplement saga. Well, I think probably we're starting to make some inroads in terms of feedback on rules, but that is a very dry topic, I think, for a lot of people out there, and probably dry for media people as well. So I agree that we've probably got some room to move in making them a little bit more accountable.
And that's it for Fair or Farce.
Fair or Farce.
You said that was an elite edition of Fair or Farce, Tom.
I think it was all right. Yeah. We covered a few topics.
I'd give it a C.
Oh, gee. Sarah making her play to be the full-time host of Fair or Farce.
You're sort of knifing me like the Liberal Party in last August, aren't you, Sarah? Speaking of politics, were you happy with the election, Ben?
Oh, you haven't been on since the election,
no,
have you?
No, I haven't.
All right, you probably missed a discussion last week, I have to say.
I asked Max a question in Fair or Farce about the election, actually.
I did hear that, yes. I prefer American politics. It's almost like it's like a TV show.
I prefer West Wing politics.
Yes. Oh, Josh Lyman's a ripper.
Always the best to go back to West Wing, timeless show. But now on the Fox Footy podcast, let's change tack and turn our attention back to the coaching landscape in the AFL industry, particularly around Brad Scott and everything that's happened with the former North Melbourne coach over the past 72 hours. A man who knows a lot about this situation, a lot about North and a lot about Brad Scott and a lot about coaches is the AFL Coaches Association Chief Executive Mark Brayshaw, and he joined us on the Fox Footy podcast. Hello, Mark.
G'day. I'm pleased to be talking to you.
Mark, just I suppose, before we sort of look at the whole coaches landscape at the moment, just one on Brad Scott. You spent a fair bit of your time when you were on the North Melbourne board when Brad Scott was actually coach of the club. What is the legacy, do you think, that Brad leaves as he departs the club after 10 years?
Good, really good question. I don't know the numbers, but he'd have to be one of the longer serving coaches at the club's time.
Third or fourth, I think, for games coached.
Yeah, well, there you go. We were resurrecting the club at the time after the trials and tribulations associated with our decision not to go to the Gold Coast, which I think really is a hallmark of Dean Laidley's tenure. But by the time Brad arrived, you know, we were still, and by the way, this is prior to the soft cap, so there was still a gaping chasm in expenditure. And, you know, I would say the club was never divided, and that's a thing that the North people are very proud of. Our decision not to go to the Gold Coast didn't split the club down the middle, but nonetheless, it was a difficult time for him. So to be able to stabilise the place was important. He recruited, I think, there's lots of his players will remember him fondly for resurrecting their careers, and I'm not saying this with anyone specifically in mind, but you can quickly peel off a handful of guys that found a happy home at Arden Street under Brad's leadership. Well, for example, Sean Higgins is a great one. I mean, there's many of them, but, you know, Jared Waite. So he seemed to have this uncanny knack of taking Nick Del Santo and other players from with well-established careers and reinvigorating them. And I think that was a special skill that he, amongst his many skills that he had. If you've never met Brad, and for your listeners, majority of whom won't, he's exactly the kind of guy you'd want in any sort of a scrap. And by the way, so unsurprisingly, so is his twin. So he's a sort of friend you have for life. He's not the most demonstrative guy, but you just know he's rock solid, and that's why the players loved him. And I think his legacy will be stabilising, and then, you know, two good tilts at the grand final. 2015, I think we were narrowly beaten by West Coast, had a really good start, and West Coast were flogged by Hawthorn, and there's a few North people who think we would have put up a good fight that day, and we just weren't quite good enough. He's going to be fondly remembered, certainly from my perspective.
Mark, are you satisfied with the way the last few days have played out from a CEO's perspective, the AFL Coaches Association?
Yep, I am. And that's important to distinguish. With my CEO hat on,
yep.
The football club, well, it's obvious to me that it's been an amicable departure, and then, you know, often they're not. 9.5 years is a long stint, we have an internal checklist that we go through. The first thing we offer for coaches leaving in these circumstances is industrial legal help, and there's no need for that. The second we look at is media and perhaps a plan B for a press conference. There was no need for that, and then we'll stay in touch with Brad. Well, for the short term anyway, but he seems to be in a good space. So, yes, I am, and none of these sort of behind-the-scenes utterances are at odds with the fact that it's been a clean and an amicable departure.
How much of a problem is it, if at all, that Craig Kelly, his manager, is also the manager of other AFL coaches who are rumoured to be under pressure as well, and that Brad Scott didn't speak to his manager about his departure from North Melbourne as his manager would have liked?
Okay, let's deal with those in reverse.
Okay.
I've listened to that quote from Brad, and I haven't spoken to him about it, by the way, but yep. I think that my interpretation of that is that the timing of the announcement and the departure caught his mum, his wife and his manager by surprise. I find it hard to believe. In fact, I don't, you know, nothing that I've heard from Brad suggests that in the ensuing weeks his manager was unaware of the decisions that had been taken, and that doesn't surprise me because Craig Kelly's a very, very, very experienced, capable bloke. The people underneath him at TLA are also there for the same reason. So I find it incomprehensible that a decision of this enormity to depart company would not have been with the involvement of Ned. I'm not surprised, though, that the decision to do so, whenever it was over the weekend, was in silence. So that's the first thing. Secondly, I don't have a problem because Craig's been around the industry for a long while. I can't think of an example where he has mismanaged any sort of a conflict of interest or TLA. They're a successful organisation that have managed players and coaches and other commercial interests within the AFL for decades. And there's no evidence to suggest that they, in the past, have mismanaged that or abused that conflict and that trust. So, if anyone asks me, I always endorse TLA and others, but TLA as a management option, and the fact that they've got a good chunk of coaches and players to me is it's academic, but practically it makes sense. Occasionally, I ring Ned. and ask him for some, you know, you can ring and get the opinion of six or seven coaches depending on what time of the year you call him, and that's a bit easier than having to ring other managers. But I think it would be harsh to criticise or imply that was a mismanaged conflict, because he's been around a long while and I don't think there's any track record to support it.
Mark, you talk about the resources that the AFL-CIO provide the coaches. I'm interested in your take on mental health in this space, because we know with the AFL-PA, that's probably their biggest space, including with past players. How do you approach that with coaches past and present?
Yep, that's a really good question. We stay in touch. When I first got involved in this job, I spoke to a couple of the coaches' wives that had been let go by their clubs, and I got a really interesting perspective about the family dimension. It won't come as any surprise to you, Sarah, or any of the listeners, that these coaches are big, hairy-chested, gruff and tough blokes and always pretend that everything's right. And I remember one of the wives saying, one of you rang my husband, he said he was okay, and you said, great, but he wasn't okay. So that's a lesson we've learned. So we always, you know, circle around later on. We keep an eye on the family. And we encourage the coach and facilitate and spend time deliberately try and encourage the coach to look forward and, you know, get busy looking out the front window rather than the in the rear view mission and plan and help and sort of generally. So in the case of Brad, it looks as though he's got some time, as he said, to play golf and so forth. So when the time's right, I'll be offering to play golf with him. I have already, by the way, at Royal Melbourne, Tom.
Excellent, I would have thought. Good.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, I'll enjoy, or we enjoy talking to him about what lies ahead and what he might be doing and how he would like us to help him get there. In other words, busy, keep busy. And you know, just keep an eye on the fact that he's going well. Now, and as I mentioned earlier, it looks as though in Brad's case it's an amicable departure. They're not always. Many of them, and you know, you can in recent times they're abrupt and they're clearly not as friendly as this one. And in which case, we have a different level of care. We have a psychologist who helps us out from time to time, and she can get involved. So what happens? It's interesting. You know, the coach is and certainly the head coach is an integral part, right in the bosom of the footy club. Then they get cut. It yep. doesn't matter whether they're the senior coach or, and all of a sudden they are no longer connected to the club, but they're still a member of the CA. And so, you know, being a voice on the phone and making them aware of opportunities that are within the industry that perhaps they, but many of them haven't put a CV together, haven't thought about another job, and get a bit lonely. So they go from being employed and in this wonderful, enriching environment, which is an AFL footy club, the rhythm of which, you know, uplifts and drops you as you win and you lose, to suddenly being a bit lonely. I'm not saying this is the case with Brad at all, but
no,
I'm talking about those that leave abruptly, and I think we have an important role to do, and I'm looking at the two guys that do it best of all, the Ron Watt and Greg Hutchison, that are out in the field. You know, I suppose our main focus is keeping these guys and their families busy and looking forward.
And that's such a wonderful job you do. I just am wondering, have you done any research to find if there is a prevalence of mental health issues among coaches or among past coaches? Because we know that the AFLPA have done their research and they realise now that it's a much bigger problem than they thought it was maybe 10 years ago.
Okay, well, yeah, the short answer is yes. And I'm pleased to tell you that for the last 4 years, we complete a quarterly wellness survey of the coaches, as of all those coaches that are members, and so we've got roughly 180 members, and every quarter we've just done it this early this in May, so we go to the to each of the coaches and they fill out a confidential survey, and it's overseen by Dr. Mandy Ruddock Hudson. She's out at La Trobe Uni, and Paul Hudson is her partner,
yep.
So she's got a really good understanding of what we're talking about. She's put together a series of questions that allow us to take the temperature, well, the wellness, the well-being of all the coaches. And provided we get enough from each club, and typically we get three quarters or so, we get about 140 responses, which is a really high level uptake. We're in a position to say to Brad Scott, for example, okay, here's how the 10 North coaches are at the moment, and here's how they compared to last quarter, last year, the best and the worst clubs in the competition, and whether or not there's anything alarming out of that. is passed on to the 18 senior coaches, and often, not often, it's not uncommon for them to get a bit alarmed at that result, and then they'll sometimes ring us, or more often Mandy, or sort of say, well, gee, what's changed, and maybe we need to back off in some areas or another. And overarching that, and very confidentially, if an individual coach has a red flag out of his response, then Mandy, and Mandy alone, reaches out and offers support, which in most cases we can dovetail into the Players Associations program. Three out of four of our members are ex-players, so they get free help if they need it from the PA, but often it's a phone call from Mandy in response to an adverse finding in this survey that can help a coach. So yes, we've been doing that now for three or so years, maybe coming up four, and it's a very valuable service, and the coaches appreciate the fact that we're just, you know, behind the scenes keeping an eye on them.
All right, Mark, let's look ahead to, well, probably the next 6 months and also next year, because Reece Shaw is taking over at North Melbourne this week, and there might be some other changes as well. From an AFLCA perspective, how important is this Level 4 coaching course, and what role do you play in helping and advising prospective coaches to apply for particular jobs?
Okay, well, the Level 4 program, let's start with it. It's a fabulous course. It's the AFL's program. It's not ours, but we kick in a bit of money each year to fund it. It's slowly but surely evolved, and it is now, I've always thought it was great. And I remember Neil Danaher, who was heavily involved in the early stages, describing it accurately as a finishing school for experienced coaches. Mm. And so I think it's great, and there will, at the end of this year, there'll be nearly 20 graduates from it. Obviously, not all of them are senior coaches, but they all are much better for it. And look, the purpose of the Coaches Association is to try and help the coaches become world-class leaders, because they've got such a critical role for the 1,000 or so professional players that are out there. So anything that gives rise to an uplift in leadership from the coaches is something we're in favour of, and there's no question that the guys that have been through Level 4 are enriched and wiser and better able to do their job in consequence of it. It's the league's program, but we have our fingerprints all over it. As for the next wave of potential senior coaches, we would like to think that boards are favourably disposed to a couple of groups of people. The first of all are those that have invested in the Level 4. Personally, I think the other group are those that have done the job and have got the flick. So there's been a bit of talk about Michael Voss lately.
Yep.
I think all the coaches always travel overseas and look in the Northern Hemisphere. And I'm a student of coaching in the Northern Hemisphere. And it seems to me that most of the coaches in the professional leagues in the North are a bit older than our coaches, generally speaking, and many of them have been in one job and failed and started again and are much, much better for the experience. So I think the industry will be looking closely at those two cohorts, the Level 4 graduates and those coaches that have been there, done that, and have picked themselves up and doing what, for example, Michael Voss is doing, which is to continue to learn at a new club. So it seems to me those are the two groups, and more and more boards are inclined to ignore. Well, and the third category, there's just not enough of them, are the people like Chris Fagan and the late Philip Walsh. Perennial coaches, been around a long, long while, accumulated untold amounts of experience, and anonymously put together a wonderful body of work, and have suddenly been approached. I remember Phil telling me that, because I worked with him at Port Adelaide, and he had absolutely no interest in anything other than the pure strategy of coaching, and then I bumped into him 10 years later after he'd spent a bit of time at West Coast, and he decided that in his early 50s, with encouragement from John Worsfold, that he'd have a go at being a senior coach. So there aren't enough of those guys, but that would probably be the third group that boards will be looking at.
And we all know the legacy that Phil Walsh has left on not only the Adelaide Football Club, but the AFL industry as a whole as well. Mark, we really appreciate your time. You've been very generous. All the best for the rest of the season.
You're welcome, and have a good day.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Bye.
Thank you very much to AFL Coaches Association Chief Executive Mark Brayshaw for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast to as we mentioned before, knows a lot about everything that's happening. Time now for the Round 10 Tips and Cups. We start on a Friday night with Richmond and North Melbourne, Tom, for the Aaron Edwards Cup, the former high flyer.
Richmond.
Do we think that the Roos might do it for Reece?
Nope. Sarah, it's absolutely not a hashtag.
No. Tigers are starting to get their act together.
Yeah, they're going, okay, I think the Tigers win.
I'm going to go for yes.
Now, you mentioned,
Richmond.
How's your tipping going, Sarah?
No, not good.
Okay.
No, I was actually going well, and then I took too many risks last weekend. I tipped Brisbane, which was looking good until the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That was a cracking game, actually. And I've been a Port believer. I'm not anymore, but I did tip them last week.
You mentioned this beforehand, the Collingwood AFLW coaching job, Tom Morris. Coincidentally, Collingwood and Fremantle playing for the Brodie Holland Cup on Saturday afternoon.
Who have been told is in the mix for that job, or may not be anymore.
Is that a bit out of nowhere?
I don't know. I don't even know if it's true. I just got told he's in the mix.
So. Okay, right.
And that's why I didn't write it.
Excellent. Happy to say it on air, though.
Happy to say it on air that's what I've been told.
Rumours.
Where's this game, Ben?
This is at the Triple MCG.
Oh, Collingwood then. Sarah, Collingwood?
Yes, definitely the Magpies for moi.
GWS and Gold Coast. This is for the Miles Hompsch Cup.
And Ben, I believe you're in the commentary box
for the
game.
Yes, looking forward to this. Heading up, this will be on 5:03 on
Who else is in the commentary box?
Jared Healy, Mark Rusciuto, and Neroli on the boundary.
Great. So have you prepared any one-liners yet?
Not yet.
Is that something you do, though?
No, I like to normally let it just flow. If it happens, it happens.
Yep. I want one. I want a gold class.
Gold class.
When Gold Coast kick a really good goal.
We'll get
if they kick one.
But before we get the tips, Thomas, you're making your Fox Footy commentary debut on Saturday as well.
I am. Slightly lesser profile game, but equally as important for the people playing.
Yes.
Vic Country versus Vic Metro under 18s.
Who's expected MCG. To win that one?
I don't know who's expected to win that one.
I think Metro are probably the stronger team this year.
A Victorian team is expected to win.
Good.
And Shift to Sheen and Ben Dixon are in the commentary box. And Caitlin Shaz Barry
KB
is on the boundary line. So looking forward to that 10:30 on Fox Footy on Saturday morning. And I've only got that gig, Ben, because you've been elevated to AFL. Judas, I'm happy to be in your shadow.
I'm not sure. Who's going to win the Suns and the Giants? Giants by how many?
I thought you were going to ask me who's going to win out of country and Metro like Sarah again. No, Giants by a lot.
Right.
They were very slick last week. They're looking good.
Yes.
Jeremy Cameron to kick 8+.
Eight.
Really?
That'd be a career high for Jeremy. Cats and Swans for the Jason Mooney Cup, brother of Cameron Mooney.
Cats, for me, I really like the way the Cats are going, even though they've got small flaws in their inside 50 count. Their efficiency is just so elite at the moment.
The Swans have a very good record down there.
They do. But were you down there for the last time these two teams
were
playing?
I was, when Robbie Fox went a bit mental in that last quarter.
Yes.
That was a good call. Flying Fox. He was flying for a grab in the last quarter.
I've never seen Sarah do that face before.
only when she's practicing her cricket shots is the only other time.
Yes.
But I don't think there's enough going right for the Swans at the moment for them to win down there, but they'll give it a crack.
They gave it a crack last week.
They're giving it a crack, which is all you can ask.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to Hawthorn v the Brisbane Lions playing for the Rahn Hooper Cup. This is at the Gabba.
This is the game of the weekend.
Huge game.
Master v Apprentice.
Yes. I'm tipping Brisbane. I am.
You like the Lions?
I like them at the Gabba. And I do love the Lions. But, yeah, I think they'll win.
Yeah, I'm sticking with the Lions as well.
Next game is Melbourne v Adelaide for the John Neeson Cup.
Just before we talk about that game, has there ever been a game where the two teams playing have travelled from so far the previous week? Hawthorn from Tasmania and Brisbane from Perth. A lot of K's in between those two
teams.
Yes,
there is.
Anyway, what's the next game?
The game is for the John Neeson Cup, Melbourne and Adelaide. James Seller very stiff not to get a gig here as well.
Adelaide will win that, although Adelaide are only just going at the moment, but Melbourne are... have two wheels. And
This is in TIO Stadium.
In Darwin. Adelaide is so hard to get a read on. I keep thinking I've got a read on them.
But Melbourne are easy to get a read on, aren't they?
33-point lead. Yeah, no, Melbourne aren't good.
No.
So that's why they're easy. But Adelaide for me.
St Kilda and Port Adelaide for the Alan Murray Cup.
That's a very good one, Ben.
Mm.
Could have been for the... Who's the current St Kilda? Logan Austin.
Oh, yes. That's
yes.
Yes.
Where is it?
It's in China. So I think this may be the answer to your question before about who's travelled.
Oh, my God.
China.
Well, I don't know who's got the home ground advantage. I'm trying to think.
Well, Port Adelaide have played there twice before, so you'd think they'd have a little bit more understanding of the venue.
It's a genuine power rankings game at a neutral venue.
Yes.
I think St Kilda win.
I'm going to go with Port.
Yeah.
Also, I wonder if there's anything in it that Port have been there twice before, they kind of know what to expect with Shanghai now, the travel and all of that. I wonder if the traffic plays a part. The traffic, what foods to eat and not eat, those kind of things.
Yeah, where they can go for a kick of the footy.
Great.
Yeah.
Essendon and Carlton, huge game Sunday afternoon for the Corey McGrath.
I believe
Cup.
I'm going to be there.
You'll be there.
For Fox?
Yeah, and this is interesting because Carlton have the wood over Essendon in recent times.
Yes. 3-2 since John Worsfold took over in favour of Carlton.
Yeah, I'm actually going to tip Carlton in this one.
Yes.
I actually think they're due. And it sounds bizarre.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it is a thing. I don't think they're a one-win team. At some stage, they're going to win at least another two or three for the year, and I think this is going to be one of them. It's like these teams that people say, oh, then who are they going to beat? Well, teams always find a way against someone. And even though Carlton lost to St Kilda last week, I thought they showed signs. They just couldn't finish the job.
And just on Essendon, so now they've got Drake Stringer's also done a hamstring. Dylan Shill did a hamstring.
Yeah.
Devin Smith, and Joe Danaher. Like, they're five massive injuries.
And also the last time Carlton played at the G, they took Collingwood all the way.
They did.
So, I don't know, something about the Blues, I'm tipping them this week. Yeah.
And West Coast and the Western Bulldogs finishing us off for the Andrew McDougall Cup.
Yeah, West Coast. Eagles. He's a player manager now, Andrew McDougall.
West Coast,
yeah,
Eagles.
West Coast, Sarah, who are you tipping?
Yeah, I'm tipping the Eagles too. I think they're starting to build.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yep, they're coming.
Nice podcast. Shout out to Maxie. Hope he's feeling a little bit better. Called in sick today. So
I think his spot's in jeopardy. Sarah's been very good today.
Everyone's spot's in jeopardy.
His spot or your spot, Dom?
Everyone's spot.
Obviously, I won't take that seriously. No mailbag, though.
No mailbag.
That's
but
fine.
But plenty of topics covered on the Fox Footy podcast, and keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.